everyone, and welcome to the show. It is March 18th, 2024, and this is episode 223. Today, I'm talking with Cher Davidson, and we are going to talk about reviving a book that you've published years before. We're going to talk about memoir. We're going to talk about starting to write again after you haven't written in a while. It was a really lovely chat, and I think that you guys are really going to enjoy this. I want you to especially think about the fact that our books are not sort of a one and done thing at all. I think it's a really great marketing tool to have book anniversaries, to have, you know, to celebrate the years that have gone by, to maybe bring out an old book and change the cover, especially the books that you really love. So as you listen to this, think about maybe the books that you have in your back catalog, the ones that you really love, the ones that you wish more readers would find, and think about bringing that out. Because again, like, we read classics all the time, right? We love Pride and Prejudice. We love Stephen King's books that he published way back in the 80s. You know, we read these books over and over again, and they stay sort of in pop culture for a long time. And so think about your books like that. What book could you pull out and sort of brush the dust off and bring out to new readers? So the new generation hasn't necessarily heard of your older books, right? People are busy. They see the new stuff coming out, but ask them, have you read my other stuff? So that's just what I would like you guys to think about as you think, as you listen to Cher and I talk. If you are listening to this the week of March 18th, 2024, you have one more week for the Kickstarter. I'm like thinking of dates, like numbers in my head, and I don't know. They're like, I can't believe that it's only one more week, but we are funded at this point. So any book that you order, I will send to you. So I'm sort of, I will get your money, and I am obligated then to send it to you. Kickstarter is a bit of a funny process, right? You're not guaranteed the product until it's fully funded, because if it doesn't fund, nobody gets charged, right? So it's kind of a little bit different. I am going to have that breakdown and talk to you a little bit more about Kickstarter. And if you guys are interested in it, I've had a couple questions from people. I'm going to try to get some others who have done Kickstarters to see if they will come on and talk about their strategies, how they did it. I'll talk to you next week about different places that you can go to start now learning, you know, and maybe get the course that people have or get their newsletter, things like that. So I'll have sort of a breakdown for you next week. It will be like not fully finished, right? So it doesn't finish until next Tuesday, but I'll pretty much be able to tell you, you know, the nail biting moments and sort of a little bit more details on how it works. And then I'll look into getting some people in. We're almost full for the podcast for this until July, which is when I take a break. In July and August, we don't put out new content. But I will squeeze someone in if you guys really want someone to talk to you about Kickstarter and how you can use it in your business, because that is what I am most passionate about, is that you guys figure out this business part of it right after you get your writing done. So without further ado, let's get into the conversation, because Cher and I actually talk quite a while, but I hope that you enjoy the interview, and I'll be back next week with Kickstarter information. If you guys like the show, please be sure to share it with others and rate it on whatever app you like to listen to it, because that helps the algorithm, right? All these things, all these algorithm things we have to think about. All right. Otherwise, I will see you guys next week. All right. Welcome back, everyone, to Pencils and Lipstick. Today, I'm talking with Cher Davidson. She is a writer of multiple genres, which we are going to get into. But first, I want to welcome her to the show. Hello, Cher. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. And it's so nice to be here with you.
Oh, it's wonderful to talk to you. We've already chatted for almost an hour. So as if that's any indication, I think we will have a great talk. But before we get into writing memoir and writing multiple genres and all the things that you do, tell us a little bit about Cher Davidson.
Oh, boy. I've lived many years, so there's a lot to tell, but I will try to be brief. I'll tell you about my writing life. And that started when I was about 20. Well, it actually started in high school. I had a wonderful high school English teacher. Unfortunately, as young people often do, I didn't listen to her in terms of pursuing, never thought I would be a writer. It just didn't occur.
Right.
I had another interest that was very strong, and that was art. And I thought I wanted to become an artist. But
Right.
went on to college at Cal Berkeley, did take a French, which I had taken all through high school. I also knew I wanted to travel. So that is what really led, that travel led to the motivation to write about.
Oh, interesting.
And I married a wonderful man. We had two little children. He was between careers. He came home one day very discouraged, says, "I think I picked the wrong one. I want to go back to school." And I said, "Well, you know what? Before you do that, let's sell our little house, first little home we owned. Let's sell it, sell everything we own, and go to Europe with our two kids."
You
And
suggested
I suggested that.
that?
And he kind of looked at me and said, Are you crazy? Could we do that?" I said, "Well, why not?" Because I was motivated. I had my first job out of college in France. I was working for the US government as
Okay, so you'd been there before.
so I'd been to France and
Okay.
I wanted to get back. I wanted to
Okay.
see French family, my French girlfriend, who I was very close to. I wanted them to meet my children and my husband. So that was the real strong motivation. Let's go back. Let's go to France. But I wanted to see other places. I wanted
Of
to
course.
go back. I wanted him to meet my family in Sweden. I had relatives in Sweden that I had visited once while I was in France.
Right.
So it was the travel thing that was very big for me.
What
And
year was this?
this was in 1972.
What did you do with the kids in their school?
They weren't going to school yet.
Oh, they were that little.
They were three and a half and five.
Nice.
And I often say to people, my older one does remember a lot, the 5-year-old, 5 and a half. The 3.5-year-old says, "You know, I think I only remember it because we've talked about it so much."
Okay.
Yeah.
So it might be like 7 and 5 might be a better age, but still, I mean, kudos to you as the mom, because we all know as mothers, most of that planning and, settling and acclimating is going to fall on your shoulders, pretty much, right?
Yeah, yes. And of course, also we had very limited funds. I sat
Right.
at a sewing machine for 3 months before we had the house in the market. It sold rather quickly. We moved in with friends. She had a sewing machine. I sat at her sewing machine making clothes for the children because in those days that was economical. It's not
Right,
anymore.
right, right.
And I must say that in many ways, traveling with little ones like that was a real travel advantage. Because they were cute, and people, Europeans, would come up, start talking to us about the children. "Oh, they're so cute." We had some wonderful experiences because of having young children with us. So I tell
Right.
people, maybe not that young, maybe the ideal age, I think, is between about 6 and a half, 7 to 12. After
Okay.
12, we'd run into families with teenagers occasionally. And the teenagers were really difficult. They wanted to be at home with their friends.
It's funny. Isn't it funny? It's when like they should be oohing and awing about, wow, look, and I'm here and whatever, and they're like, meh. I
No,
don't
not
think
yet.
that's changed.
No, not that interested. No, I
I
really
know,
don't.
it's so funny. Like they should be appreciative of it, because we travel with our teens all the time, and we went to Segovia. Like it's always a midpoint to meet friends when we're in Spain,
Oh,
and
it's an
Segovia has the ancient Roman aqueducts
aqueduct.
still all
Oh,
around the city. It's an amazing feat. It's
it is.
almost 2,000 years old. It's pretty crazy, and it's one of the last places where the Romans had to like surround those stubborn Spaniards and starve them out to conquer them. They're very stubborn. So it's a great historical place. And they were chatting with their friends, because we only meet these friends every, few years. And my husband was frustrated, and I was like, oh, look at it this way. At least they're talking to their friends and they're not on their cell phones. But like, yeah, Oh yeah, I see the aqueduct. Yeah, it's no big deal. It's like
Yeah.
it's a huge deal. They just don't get it. It's fine. It's fine. They'll get it someday. So you're going over there in the 1970s. I would assume this isn't, I mean, I don't know that it's very common these days, but it's probably more common these days than back then. Or am I wrong? Like moving to another country
Oh,
with
it
kids.
was very uncommon. There were
Okay.
people that thought we were crazy. Fortunately, our families were very supportive.
Okay.
And another motivation was that my husband's father died at 53, and he had just died about the same time, and had always wanted, he was Irish, and he'd always wanted to go back to his homeland.
Right.
And that was another thing. We said, you know, let's do it now. We
Yeah,
never,
yeah.
and we didn't have very much money,
Right.
so we knew we'd have to camp. So that was where we bought the
You
Volkswagen
can't.
van. That is why my book is called Europe with Two Kids in a Van.
In a van.
We lived on $10 a day then.
Did you go with the idea of writing a book?
No, not at all.
No, you went for the adventure.
We went for the adventure.
Yeah.
So I wasn't thinking of writing a book. It was when I got back and I had sent tapes to my family because they wanted to keep hearing the children. Those were the days.
Right, there's no email, right?
Yeah. No email. So, they'd get 3 weeks later, they'd get a little tape. We'd
What a
recorded the
good
children's
idea.
voices. And my dad was so intrigued by the things that I would say on these tapes and
Yeah.
his grandchild. And my dad had an old upright typewriter, and he said, "Honey, write the book."
Oh, wow.
And I thought, here, I've always loved to write. Oh, why not?
Yeah.
No, pourquoi pas?
Yeah.
But we were struggling financially. We moved to a very tiny little rural town that was very well known for artists. See, I was the
Okay.
art person. And when my children were little, I used to work in my garage making jewelry. I had
Okay.
started making a metal. I had taken a metalsmith class, and I was making this jewelry, and my neighbors would buy the jewelry from me. And so my husband wanted to go back to graduate school, and we moved. Very beautiful little town near a major university in Northern California, Humboldt County. Anybody listening will know about this. And the town is called Ferndale. A lot of artists were moving there, a lot of
Okay.
hippie artists. We were
Yes.
also very anti-Vietnam. You have to realize that was another
Oh,
motivation
okay.
for the trip. We were very upset with what was going on in the country, and we wanted to explore and, kind of think about what was happening and get
Right.
perspectives on that. So when he gave me that idea, I opened up a little jewelry store in that town, rented an old barber shop for $40 a month, started a little jewelry store, and I'd come home at the end of a long day working at my jeweler's bench and sit at the typewriter and stay up till 3 and 4 in the morning typing this book out.
Oh my goodness.
I had no idea once I got pretty far into it how I would get it published. I went to my little local library, and she handed me a big book called The Publisher's Digest.
Yes.
I looked through that and I found publishers that were interested in travel books mostly.
Right.
I started sending off, I didn't know the word query letter in those days. I just sent a letter with
Right.
a little bit of the book. And in 6 weeks, I had a publisher.
Wow. Oh
It
my
was so
goodness.
exciting. It doesn't happen that way now.
Did you call it a travel book then? Like, is that what the genre was?
The genre, it's interesting. We use the word travel memoir now.
Okay.
They call it a travel guide. I
Oh.
call it both a memoir and a guide. And the new
Okay.
one, both of them, because I had a section which was the story of what we were doing, funny things that happened,
Yeah.
the story. And then the end of each chapter, I had a section which they gave a name to. I hadn't named it yet, summing up. And that was the guide part. And
Okay.
I wrote letters all over to chambers of commerce in Europe and got letters back. So I had to put all of those because we didn't have the internet. So now, of course, in the new revised edition, I just have websites. But then,
Right.
it was so different. And I then they wrote back. The publisher that picked my book called me actually, and said, "We want to publish your book." And it wasn't finished yet. And they said that this was like June. And they said, we want it by January. We're planning to put it out in January. Can you get it to us? I said, oh, yes, I will.
Oh my goodness. So more 3 a.m. nights
It
just to
was
get.
many 3 a.m. nights. Yeah. And then it was so fun, though, because they'd send me the galleys, you know, and I'd get to go through and check and make sure everything was the way I wanted it. And it's very different from today.
So
And then,
it did they change it very much from how you had structured
no, they didn't change it much other than like that naming, that section, the summing up. No, they seemed to pretty much like what I had done.
That's pretty cool.
They wanted illustrations, but they didn't. I said, well, I'm an artist. I'm so glad I didn't do that. Because they chose a wonderful illustrator. He was a very actually I got to know him later a little bit through mail, not email, through mail, letter he wrote. And he did black and white drawings. It's a very different look. I should show you. Look, this is what the first one looked like.
I really like that cover. It's a funny size, though, isn't it?
It
It's a
is. Well,
different.
all of their books were square.
Interesting.
They did a square format. It was a publishing company that was an arm of Scribner's in New York. Scribner's did all the distribution, but they were an independent publishing company called 101 Productions. They put out many, many, many books for several years. They've been defunct for a long time now. I mean, if they weren't, it would have been great because now I would just go right back to them.
Oh, that's so funny. Did
You
they have a
know,
reason for being square? Just to.
I don't know, maybe to make it stand out in the market, you know, some of the I was going to show you the drawings. Well, here's, but they're all black and white drawings. That
Those
happened to
are
be,
wonderful.
that actually happened to be in Spain, which you're familiar with. You know, he took things out of my text that inspired him
Oh, very cool.
he has little ones with the children. I haven't seen that yet, but he has ones of two little kids walking down a street.
It
So,
looks like a very engaging book. Like they put a lot of thought into putting that book together. It's not your typical travel guide that, the Florida Keys. I don't know where to eat. Like they put a lot of thought into engaging the reader really for that book.
yeah, I think they really appreciated that it was a story as well as a guide.
That's
And
cool.
I think they put more emphasis on that story part. So,
So what
yeah.
was it like once you got the book published? What did you feel? What did you do? Did it change
Oh,
your life forever?
I was so excited. I should show you this picture. This is me in those days.
With the printed book.
And they had just sent me, I got the box of books.
That's
And
so cool. That's
look,
so exciting.
I look kind of dazed, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
I think I was dazed. I couldn't believe it, you know. And my little town newspaper, I got a headline in the, you know, town newspaper, local writes this book, da, da, da. It was very fun. And, you know, then I was so busy raising two children and working, and we were struggling financially while my husband went back to graduate school. So I didn't think I could write again. I was busy running a jewelry business, which became quite a success, actually, and helped support the family.
So that took your focus. Like
That
you
took
had a
all.
book and it was like moving on,
Done
feeding
that,
children.
been there. Well, and that, I think in the back of my mind, I liked writing, so I think I thought of it. But it was really much later that I really picked up writing again, which was
Yeah, because your next book came out when?
214. So it was like 30,
2014.
what was it, 39? I figured I did the math one day. I can't remember. 37 years or something. But I actually started writing that 214 novel around, oh, let's see, what was it? 2010. So it took me about 5 years to get that novel really off the ground and done.
But it's a
And
novel. It's
it's
not a
a novel.
memoir.
It's a
What
novel, not at all.
made you switch genres? What made you start writing that book
I had
and
a
not as a
story.
memoir?
I had in the meantime, we had moved to Mexico.
Oh, wow.
We had been doing, we had done some work, humanitarian aid work in Nicaragua during the war. And then we had done some work in El Salvador. I was very involved in El Salvador with a program in a very tiny, very, very poor village. Actually, I was teaching art to young children who basically never even had a pencil to their name. They were so poor. And I was very moved by the people in Central America and Mexico. And I started this story, just kind of came to me about an American woman who goes there as I was going there to those countries. And the story kind of grabbed me. And so when I'd have free time, I would just sit down at my computer then, not a typewriter, tap out some pages. And I just kind of went with it. I shared it with a few other people, and they said, "Oh, this is good. You ought to continue this." I always call it a love story wrapped around the issue of immigration, which is a continuing issue. So, yeah, that was Under the Salvadoran Sun.
So that's fiction, but it sounds like it was drawn a lot from your experiences
Some
being
of it
there.
was drawn from my experience. Yes, some of it was like the helping people. The main character, Angela, who's from Seattle, Washington, she's a sculptor, by the way. So, you know, some of my art background came in there. And you know, that definitely was an influence. I mean, our trip, I didn't include exact experiences, but that was definitely part of it.
Well, I'm sure like that experience helps you to write about cultures and people who are very different from how you've grown up in a much more compassionate and realistic and respectful way, rather than you've seen them, you've spoken to them, you've lived with them. Otherwise, we have
I'm sure
to
I lived
Google.
in rooms with dirt floors, watching rats go across the beam, and big banana spiders coming very close. That was in Nicaragua. Oh my goodness. We were living with a nurse. This is how she lived. We were helping in the hospital. And you know, you were affected by those things. And those provided me with a lot of fodder, a lot of material to write about. I could have written a nonfiction book, but for some reason, I really wanted to write creatively. I really wanted to create a story, a new story. You know, it was really fun to do that.
It
It
sometimes it's
had an
easy.
arc.
Yeah, it's e I was just gonna say it's easier to find that arc, because sometimes I've had experiences where I've it's impactful, but you can't quite find the arc of what it impacted you, other than inwardly you're just wide open. You feel different, but you, like a story in the end, it needs an arc more than anything, right? So what genre would that be? With all of our weird genres that we have these days and
Yeah,
all
there's
the
so
niching out.
many. We go off and buy these. You've got to pick
What did Amazon decide that
Amazon. You've got to, oh, that is so complex, isn't it? Picking the right care. What do we call it now? I'm going blank for a minute. The theme. We don't say theme though. What is it?
I think it they what do they call it something other than genre?
Yeah,
Okay,
they don't really
this
call
one's
it.
called Under the Salvadoran Sun. That's probably what, literary fiction?
Literary. Yeah, I think I did. I think you hit the nail. I think I said literary fiction or women's fiction. I think I said women's fiction.
Probably women's fiction as well.
And I later kind of regretted that because, oh, categories. That's what I was trying
Oh,
to
yes, they
think.
say categories.
As you know, and for so long, you could pick three, then it was 10, now it's back to three, I
I
think.
know. They
And
keep
it's,
messing with us.
I'm always trying to explain to readers why those categories are so important, you know, on Amazon at least, because the way you get seen is where you rank in that category. And I didn't know that. Very naive when I did that novel in 2014. And the people helping me were actually kind of naive too. So I
Well, that
called.
was still the beginning, right? Like, this is the ebook beginning. This is Amazon was still a baby, weirdly enough.
We didn't have an ebook. No, I didn't even have an ebook for that.
Right. A lot of people thought, like, poo-pooed ebooks. The
Yeah.
big publishers were. So, I mean, I did not want to be indie published. in 2012, 2013, like, oh no, you still need a publisher. You know, it took me years to be like, nah, I don't need a publisher to do it.
Right. That's right. And actually, I was, and another big inspiration was living in Mexico in the town I lived in. It was
Okay.
famous for the Writers Conference. That was the San Miguel de Allende Writers Conference, annual writers
Ah,
still going.
right.
I went to the very first one. I think this year is the 21st or 22nd.
Wow.
And I met Erica Jong. She was the keynote speaker. And I walked into the room, little room, only about 200 people attended, now 1,000 people attend.
Right.
I was early and she was there and she was sitting out her books. And I was very shy and I didn't want to go up and approach her. She approached me and she said, "Why are you here?" And I said, "Well, I've written a book and I really want to continue it. I'm just finishing it now." And she picked up her book, Sappho's Leap, which is a very interesting book, and quickly wrote her name on the front of it and handed it to me. And she said, "Here, take the leap right
Oh,
now."
that's really
That was a
nice.
really a moment I will always remember.
Yeah.
It hit me that I can do this.
Yeah.
She's telling me, do it.
Yeah.
When I do it.
So
So I,
was it a big leap to go from jewelry artist to writer? Like what do you see it? Are there differences or similarities between those two arts?
no, there's left and right brain.
Yeah, it's completely different.
I mean, when you're writing, you're really in your left brain. And when you're creating, you're in your right brain.
Yeah.
So, I think there's certain advantages to being able to function in both areas
Okay.
because I can design and I can think about what I want for covers more
Okay.
seriously. Yeah, but I think maybe, and then also I wrote my character as an artist.
Right.
She's a sculptor, and so
And you
that
can give details to that. Yeah.
I can use details. Yeah,
Yeah.
I can know the language that's used.
True, true. Otherwise, that is important though to understand your characters. So that we'll call it women's fiction, literary fiction, but then you wrote a mystery thriller.
Yes, then I waited again. There's always these big chunks of time where I'm just.
Takes time to write a story. I
And then I wrote, I don't know if I'd call it a thriller. It's not really
No.
a, well, maybe it is. There's a part of it is pretty much a thriller. But no, I had this, I was so fond of my Swedish relative, M, so not was, M. I have two cousins. They have wonderful names, Torkel and Torlif. Their
Oh, I love
father
that.
named them after the Viking gods. And they're delightful. And I have visited them now several times over my life.
Okay.
And I started getting over a dinner conversation one night with actually their father. So they're my third cousins, and their father was my second cousin. He, Boris, was his name. We started talking about World War II. And I won't go into a lot of details, but there were some things that came up in that dinner conversation that concerned me, and or maybe not concerned me, because I kind of suspected it anyway, but gave me more fodder to work with. And I started thinking about, Sweden was a neutral country during World War II, but there's been scholars ever since World War II that have questioned that. Were they truly, truly, truly neutral?
Can anyone ever be truly neutral? I mean, your neutrality comes at a cost, doesn't it?
That's right. And for them, it was hard because they were very close to Germany
And
and
Russia.
Russia. And also, they needed to sell their iron ore, which those countries needed for things that we would hope no country had to make, but they do.
Oh, they do. Yep.
So I got very interested. I started doing a
Yeah.
lot of research, and I had a character in mind. And I was trying to think where Lena came from. Oh, well, I know my cousin's daughter's name is not, her name is Lena, and I always liked her name, but I didn't want to use her name exactly. And Lena is also Swedish, so it was Lena. So the character came to me and her search to understand something. I got very, oh, I took a wonderful workshop at the Writers' Conference, in fact, from a marvelous writer, Elizabeth Rosner. Rossner. In fact, she was very kind to let me use a phrase from her book in the opening of my book about intergenerational trauma. She was the daughter, or is, not was, is, she lives in Berkeley. She is the daughter of Holocaust survivors, both her parents. And so she feels her whole life has been very much affected by that. And now there's more and more studies of intergenerational trauma and epigenetics. They're finding it's true. You carry trauma and you pass it on to generations. So this, and then I started to realize, gee, this state, I grew up in California, but by this time we'd been living several years in Oregon. Oregon is filled with Scandinavians. And there's a
Really?
little town, Astoria, on the coast where the Finns came, the Swedes came. Yes, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, they started moving. The Finns were leaving the Russians. You know, they were, the Russians were at very actively dominating Finland. And they came for the lumber industry in Washington and the fishing. So the town of Astoria on the coast, we loved to go over there to the beach, and I would go visit some of the historical, well, there not some, there's a wonderful historical museum there. And I thought, oh, that's the place. This character is going to grow up with a Swedish grandmother. And the Swedish grandmother has nightmares. And why? Why do
Why?
nightmares?
That's
So
wonderful though, how you're piecing that together. Yeah, it took a trip to see your cousins and to see, open your eyes to something that seems, like, oh yeah, we can rationalize pretty quickly where Sweden might have been during the war, what difficulties might have come up, and then how you've had to figure out who the main character is and then where they might be. Are they in Sweden? Are they in America? If they're in America, where are they? Like, I love how you've laid that out for us, because that's such a big part of writing fiction, of
it is.
figuring all those little things out so that it makes sense, which I think then once it makes sense, your brain is like able to breathe and go into the actual story.
Yeah. And as a writer, once you got maybe a little piece of that thread and you start writing, I tell people, and they look at me a little strangely, my characters are talking to me. I'll wake up in the middle of the night. And I'll have, my husband says, what are you doing? What are you, oh, I've got this. She's going there. I've got to get up and write about this.
Like, our brains are like, oh, here we go. Always at very inconvenient times, for
Yeah,
sure.
always an inconvenient time. But I just, the ideas just came. Yeah, I enjoyed writing that story. And I would share it with I have two daughters. They're both big readers. So I would share it with them, and my older daughter especially. She'd say, Mother, keep finishing that. This is great. I love this story. Keep talking about Lena.
That's good to have that person
And
thinking.
travel came into this, by the way, because I have her going to where? To study Paris,
Oh, perfect.
where I
Perfect.
lived and worked. And then she finds out she's got a sleep disorder. She's doing very poorly at the Sorbonne because she falls asleep in class. And she knows sleep disorders because she grew up as a child always hearing the grandmother scream with the nightmares. So
Oh, and connecting that all. Like, yeah, that's so
has to
cool.
go to Sweden. What happened?
Yeah, I
What
gotta go figure this out so I can sleep. I mean, yeah, you're right, raising the stakes right there, right? And something is about to be lost, right? So she's gonna lose her degree if she doesn't sleep.
That's
It
right.
seems.
That's right.
I love that. I love how that came about. So I do want to talk to you about so you published your first one in 1972, and then 2010, and then 2014. And I work with a lot of women in my book coaching. I work mostly with women over 50, because I think that lots of women over 50, and probably men too, all the men out there, I haven't forgotten you. I just, you got a niche. They have things to say and to write. And a lot of times, what I've heard from a lot of people who sometimes work with me and sometimes choose not to, that they think it's too late, that, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. I mean, there's a lot of excuses that center a lot around our country's obsession with youth. I'll put it like that. So, what has motivated you to write and to get back to it and to, I guess we'll call it the second half of our life. Like, why do you think would be a reason for someone to encourage them to sit down and write the book that is coming to them? And let's talk a little bit about that and how you sort of found the courage to do that, the way that you go forward, and maybe even like learning even more of your craft as you do this.
I mentioned the San Miguel Writers Conference, and I have to say that the many keynote speakers, they often have wonderful, like Margaret Atwood, King Solver,
I mean,
Paul Theroux.
intimidating writers.
And you could be intimidated, but what I was inspired. And at the same time, I could take classes there because the conference, you have the keynote speakers, and then you go off to these various workshops. And so many people, like I mentioned, Elizabeth Rosner, I took a workshop from her, and she's a wonderful writer. And I took workshops from a lot of other writers, and I began to learn the craft. I'm glad you used the word craft because until then, like even with that first book, I didn't think of it as craft. It is a craft, and there are certain elements, just like if you're creating a piece of a sculpture out of clay, there's certain steps you have to follow. The same with writing. There are certain things you have to learn. You have to learn story arc. You have to learn about your plot, creating a dynamic plot, each chapter be almost being like a plot in itself. And I learned so much. I got so inspired by that, that is what motivated me, even at my age, to say, I think I can do this. And of course, I had that wonderful moment of take the leap. And I thought, well, I wasn't always thinking. A lot of times I think people think, oh, I want to be a famous author. I'm going to be published. That really wasn't the motivation. The motivation was the joy of writing down a story, whether I published it or not, writing the story. It was speaking to me. I wanted to get it down. Just like if I have an idea to create, I work both in clay and I do three-dimensional art as well as I'm a painter. Not so much anymore because my writing has really taken over. So I haven't created as much, but often it's the idea and then working with the material that are the most fun, So it's really just writing that grabs me. And then when I get kind of where I think it's done, then I think, well, what am I going to do with this? Then that's when you start thinking, publish, publish, publish,
Get it out there.
get it.
Do you think being among writers at that conference, like what was going to the conference just sort of a whit, like something you thought, well, if I want to write a story, I should go to this conference and see? Or was it to meet other writers and see how possible it was? Or in how much do you think is getting amongst other writers important to getting your work done?
Very important. Yes, it was inspiring. I was inspired by the people I heard speak, by the classes I took. I had a little home there where it was large enough that I could offer, so I would often help at the conference and take host those who came, and that was delightful. In fact, I had a couple of wonderful poets. I love poetry. I would love to say I'm a poet, but I'm probably not. But I do write a little poetry. So I would have people stay. And I even had a, by the way, I even had a wonderful visitor and his family because I was the one person who was willing to accommodate his wife and 13-year-old. And we had enough, we had 3 bedrooms, and we were able to accommodate that family. And he owns a big agency, he's an agent. I'm so silly. My husband said, "Why didn't you tell him you were a writer?" I didn't until the last night I had them. You didn't have to have them for meals, but I invited them for a special dinner. They were being picked up by a shuttle bus at 3 in the morning. So I said, "I'm having this dinner for you, and you can get to bed and sleep a little bit." And my husband kept saying, tell him, tell him. So over dinner, I said, oh, by the way, I do write too, and I have had one book published, and his eyes went like that, and he said, "Well, tell me about it." But we didn't have much time to talk, and
Right.
I kept hoping maybe. I mean, he was very nice. We corresponded a few times, but he wasn't publishing the kind of thing I was
Right.
writing.
And
And
isn't that part of this industry too that you have to sort of learn is like it takes more than one contact almost, because what if he tra you know, if he publishes travel memoir and you're writing a literary women's fiction, it's not that it's not publishable, it's just that it's they're not the right person, right? And that's one of the things we gotta learn.
It's a hard thing at times. He's very nice. I actually wrote me about the he wrote back about when I did Dark Secrets. What was that? It came out summer before last, and he did write a very nice note. I don't think he had read it, but he said, "Good for you, you did it." And
Yeah. I also find going to conferences actually gets me out of this weird thing in America, and I think it happens even in England, kind of the Western English speaking world, is like we really put on a pedestal people, you know, the 30s under 30, or you know, the 20s under, like the people in their 20s that have made it or whatever. And okay, which is great. That's all great for you. But when you go to the conference and you're amongst the writers, most of them are 50 and over. Like
that's right.
most, it kind of gets you out of that thought of like, I've missed the boat. Like you haven't missed any boat.
No.
There's no boat. And in fact, the life that you've lived that's so rich and engaging and the things that you've seen and experienced are actually going to make your stories richer, right? And I wonder too if we have more patience for the craft, then we might have less arrogance too.
That we do as youth.
Yeah.
And I think it is true that the longer you've lived, you have more material that you can
Yeah.
draw from, that you can bring into, whether your story is imaginary or if it's nonfiction, you have all that material of your life that you draw from.
Yeah. So what would you tell people if they're thinking of starting to write or getting back to writing, or maybe they're switching genres? Is there, besides the conference, is there any craft book or craft workshop or something that maybe you've just learned and sort of internalized that you would encourage them to lean into maybe as they get back to writing their stories?
If they can't go to writers' conferences, and most cities at least have some form of a writers' conference, get together with other writers, have a writing group, find people that want to write. And I think that's a number one. You need that feedback. In fact, on
Okay.
the Salvador and Son, I had a writers' group here in Portland. There were about eight of us, and that was very helpful. I also took a wonderful workshop, local workshop from a local writer. So I think having other people kind of feeding you is very
Yeah.
important.
Yeah.
I think people in the past 50 age group often think memoir, and rather than a fiction book, like
Okay.
I with the fiction, and because they feel they begin to realize they had experiences in their life they'd like to share. And I think what they fail to do, though, is to take writing workshops, because they may have the story, but it's how you put it together. A
Oh,
memoir
good.
is much like a novel. You
Yeah.
have to have, we talked about a story arc. You have to have something that creates, that draws the reader in.
Yes.
Your just your own personal story. Oh, I lost my child when I was 25, my first baby, and that's a sad story, but
Yeah.
that's a story a lot of people have had. What makes it unique?
Yeah.
You have to say, what makes my story different from anyone else? And then, how do I put it together so that if it's in chapters, each chapter has an arc and has a plot point, and those are the kind of structure, by the way, I'm
Yeah.
talking about structure. That was the hardest for me to learn, but I realized how important it was that you
Right.
have learn structure. You can't just go writing. And then yesterday I did this because it's boring. No one
Yeah.
wants to read that. You
Yeah,
have to.
and that's not taught to us in our high school classes. And I have to say that was probably the thing that took me the longest to learn, because nobody could really tell me what was wrong, but it was missing structure. It was
Action.
missing plot points. It was, I now try to differentiate with my coaching clients, like, you're a great writer, but now we got to pull out the storytelling. And
Yes.
because there is a difference, if you can spin a paragraph, that's great, and conjure up details, and that's wonderful. But
Yes.
there needs to be a story, right? That's what's going to hook us and keep us reading that story. And we were talking about Boys in the Boats before we started recording, right? And just
Yeah.
how artistic that structure is on how he put together that story. Because there's, if you think about his life, there's a lot that must not have gone into that book.
Oh
A
yes,
lot of details.
the life of the main character. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of
Yeah.
the ones. Yeah, they all had a story, but the author was very smart to focus a lot on that one and
Right.
really show so much that was happening in America at the time.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's a phenomenal
Right.
accomplishment.
And I don't think, just like you've said, I don't think that that comes naturally. I think that's something you learn, right?
You
From
learn.
feedback, from maybe workshops. And I like that you brought up local workshops. I think almost every local area has a community college, a big library, central library, these, workshops that we might not notice, but they're much cheaper than going off to get your MFA. And you might be surprised about who you'll learn from and what you'll learn, you know?
Yeah, you learn from your fellow writers too in a writing group, and
Right.
you get that feedback, and as long as you've set a kind of parameters with the group that we're going to all be honest, we're going to each read a chapter and decide and talk about what works and what doesn't work. Yeah, that feedback is invaluable.
Yeah, it's gold, and I think it's what keeks you going, right, to finish it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's always my thing. Now we got to keep going. We got to finish it.
That's true.
So your next work though is a memoir that you're working on now,
Yes, so
and
I
then
have.
you're thinking of finishing another mystery.
Yeah, so see, here I am, kind of, back and forth. So the first, the travel memoir and guide, then the novel, and now I'm thinking, and oh, and then actually two novels kind of lumped together because then I did Dark Secrets, the one we just talked about, and place in many places, Sweden and here in Oregon, and then I at the back of my mind, I've had another desire to write a memoir that is very, very personal, and I've set it aside and thought, no, I can't do that, and then I pull it out again. So it has been being written over about probably 10 years now, and I'm hoping this year I've had enough encouragement, as I spoke to you about earlier, that I'm hoping maybe to get it off the ground by the end of this next year. But I hate to put a date because, as as a writer, it's hard to say, oh yeah, I'll have it out in 5 weeks or I'll have it out in 6 months. I don't know. I don't know when I'll feel it's done. And I'll want to get feedback. I don't have that original writing group anymore. Actually, I've been kind of looking for a local writing group. I want to get more feedback on it. I've shared it. I actually have shared it at a conference with a couple of agents I talked to you about. They were very encouraging, said, get it done, get it done. So, I just.
And there are times that it takes time,
Yeah.
and that's okay too. We're such a fast-paced society all the time. Get it out, get it out. But there's something about, especially something so personal as a memoir, to get it out once you know it's done. Like that fine line between never getting it out and no, and waiting till it's finished, right? And but honestly, too, even finishing the memoir, and if you decide personally not to publish it or not to share it, I still think writing it out is therapeutic.
I do too. Oh, I'm glad you brought that out. Yes. Just the writing out of something that's been sitting in your mind and heart for a long time. And I think many people, many, I think I'll be a real feminist here. I think many women, probably as many men, but I know more women who say, oh, I want to write my story. And I often say, just do it. Don't worry if it ever becomes a book.
Right.
Just write it. You will find it is so soothing to get those words on a page and then read back. And yeah, I
Yeah.
think there's a real value to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. So if anyone wants to find out more about you, we're going to have the links in the show notes, but your website is sharedavidson.com and they can get on your newsletter. And can they still buy the Europe in with two kids in a van?
Well, the new one, not the old one,
Okay.
but the new one just came out in December. I mean, here it is. This is the new.
Isn't that lovely? That's a wonderful cover.
Yeah, I had fun with this cover with my cover designer because I noticed the covers were so different now. They're much more colorful in general,
Right.
and they're playful. And the whole subject of traveling with little children is a playful kind of topic.
Yeah.
And so that's the new one. The Dark Secrets or the Under the Salvadoran Sun. Oh, I studied with Luis Urrea. And after I was talking with him, and afterwards, he gave me a blurb, but the book was already out.
Oh, really?
Oh, and
That's
when I did,
wonderful.
yeah. And so I had a little, he said, just put a sticker, just put a sticker on there. So he says on that, this story is a new twist on a border novel.
Oh, wonderful. I love that.
And
Yes.
Luis was really wonderful to study with. He taught me a lot. And he, by the way, spoke at the Writers' Conference several times. And then Dark Secrets is this one. Same
That
cover designer, by the way.
Oh, she does a lovely job, honestly. It's
Yeah,
very
and
cool.
it's an actual picture. Do I have time to tell the fun little story about
Yeah,
the
go ahead.
There's a
We
story.
need stories on this one.
My cousin in Sweden is a photographer. Not a
Okay.
professional, but he could be because he does beautiful photography. I happen to have a path where he lives in a woods. He li actually lives in a beautiful woods in southern Sweden, Blekinge. And I love to go through this woods on this path. And it had just snowed, and he sent me this picture. This would be 2 winters ago. And he said, I thought you'd enjoy this because I know you love this path. They call the lynx path because they've actually seen lynx there. And it was right as I was finishing the book, but thinking about the cover. And I said, oh, Torkel, his name is Torkel. Can I use that picture? And he said, sure. And he gave permission. And so I got all that officially taken care of. But I wanted somebody in it.
Yeah.
And so I wanted Lena, the main character, to be in the story. She would often walk through this with a little basket. It's called a mushroom collecting basket. And I found this. I was having my hair cut, and a woman in the hairdresser had a long blonde braid, and she looked just like what I imagined Lena to look like.
Oh,
And
that's
I
so
said,
cool.
would you be my model? Oh, she was just delighted. I said, you'll be on my cover of my book. And I said, I'd be glad to pay. Oh, no, I'm so excited to do this. So my husband and I got a green screen. We went down there one night when everything was closed, and there was a nice big wall that we could photograph her. We did the photograph. I think I went to Goodwill to get the sweater,
Oh my goodness. Oh my
and
goodness.
I had the hat, and we photographed her. Well, we got it all finished, and our cover designer had already put her in there using Photoshop, and I said, "Oh, we forgot the basket." So he said, "Don't worry, just set up a little place in your house against a wall, set up your green screen. Put the basket on your arm, wear the same sweater, which I had, and have your husband take the picture. And I'll, that is my arm. That is my arm in that."
Oh my gosh, the amazing things you can do with
Isn't
Photoshop.
that fun? I mean, that's technology today.
Yeah.
And I
And
just,
you can't even tell that it
no, I can't just, yeah.
that's amazing.
Well,
That's
luckily, she and I were about the same size, and my arm was enough like hers. And so that's the story behind that.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that.
How did
Always
we
be on the
start?
lookout for someone who can model your cover.
Yeah, always watch. Yeah, if you want a person, look for those models out
Look
there.
for those models. And I love how you ask. You just gotta ask, right?
Yeah.
Gotta
And
put
I, you
yourself
know,
out there.
it was she was so well. I still am connected to her. It was when I go get my hair cut, we always laugh about it, and
That's
Yeah.
wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Cher, for coming on the show and talking to us about memoir writing and multiple genre writing and all the things that you have done in your life.
Oh, it's been a joy talking to you, Kat, and I'm looking forward so much to reading your books. And it's just been delightful. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you.